Kia ora, nau mai ki te whare. Welcome to the house, ko Louis Collins aho. A Queenslander, a Falkland Islander, a Gibraltan, and a Tasmanian walk into a debating chamber. It might sound like the setup of a bad taste joke, but this was no punchline, just the reality at this week's Commonwealth Youth Parliament, which this year was hosted at New Zealand Parliament in Wellington.
Hello, my name is Timoira Tontule. I'm from the beautiful island of Niue.
Bolivinaka, my name is Kinisimere Wimbua, and I'm from the beautiful islands of Fiji.
I'm Jesse Rashid. I'm the South Australian delegate for the Commonwealth Youth Parliament.
My name is Rene Yard. I am a youth delegate from the country St. Lucia.
My name is Zaria Ingham, and I am a youth delegate from the Turks and Caicos Islands.
My name is Camilo Pascal, and I'm a youth delegate from Trinidad and Tobago.
Every 2 years, young leaders from across the Commonwealth's 56 nations assemble together where they participate in a mock parliament of a made-up country. Now, when I say young leaders, you're probably thinking 16 and 17-year-olds, but the Commonwealth Youth Parliament is slightly different in that it extends from 18 to 29-year-olds. 29 might sound like a bit of a reach in associating with the word youth. However, it makes sense when you consider the average age of lawmakers around the world is 53, and in New Zealand, it's just under 50. Refreshingly, the subject matter of the debate at the Commonwealth Youth Parliament was a welcome deviation from the politically safe textbook debating subjects like uniforms in schools. The mock bill being debated in the House was this.
Climate Change Resettlement and Humanitarian Aid Bill, first reading.
From the outset, it was clear that delegates were very much in their element. Here's a quick pick and mix of remarks from the first reading debate. The Falkland Islands' Torrin Matthew Hart.
If we are to stand for human rights, stand for social justice, stand for international solidarity, the rights of refugees must be guaranteed.
New Zealand's John Prenter.
Let me walk the coalition government through economics 101. Increasing demand without increasing supply, what will it do? It will increase our prices, the problem we already have with a housing crisis. And so naturally, it's going to make our young people flee the nation at an increasing rate than they already are.
St. Lucia's Chanel Eugene.
Mr. Speaker, when I was in primary school level and I would have defined the word climate change on my notebook, I would have thought that this phenomenon was a far-fetched narrative. However, you will agree with me that things are rapidly changing around us, and this administration has taken this initiative to not just support our people, but to also provide assistance to those crippled by the phenomenon of climate change.
Pakistan's Sirish Mushtaq.
So on our side, we really care about the people and the kind of dignity that they have. On theirs, they only care about the problems, but the solution is, oh, you don't know economics, or you probably have to care about the cost-benefit analysis we have given you.
And South Australia's Jesse Rashid.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. How good are visas? How good are refugees? And Mr. Speaker, how good is part two of this bill? Very good is the answer, and I'll tell you why.
Presiding over the debate was one of New Zealand's assistant speakers. The Green Party's Te Anu Tuiono was, it's safe to say, impressed.
Members, that concludes our time here today. And let me end by commending you on the quality of the speeches, some of you more timely than others, if I have to be honest. Some might actually also say that an improvement on a number of the speeches we often hear in this chamber.
For delegates from low-lying island nations, which are plentiful in the makeup of the Commonwealth, a bill about climate change resettlement is beyond a hypothetical. I discussed this with Niue's Tamura Tongatuli and Kinisimere Vuibua from Fiji.
It's very humbling and refreshing as well to have a bill that recognises the challenges that we, the smaller Pacific Islanders, face in terms of climate change, because we pretty much are at the forefront of climate change. And it's very refreshing to have that sort of acknowledgement when it comes to a bill that wants to make a change that directly affects us.
Yes, we were just talking just a few minutes earlier how this bill is it's really close to our heart, because whatever they're saying, we're actually facing.
New Zealand, as the host parliament, had the creative freedom to choose the bill topic and create a fictional jurisdiction. Working alongside Parliament to facilitate the event was the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association. Here is the organisation's president, and yes, that is his real name.
Ben Franklin, and I'm the president of the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association.
And for listeners that might not be up to date on their acronyms and inter-parliamentary organisations, what actually is the CPA?
So the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association is basically an organisation of the 56 Commonwealth nations, where members of parliament from each of the federal or national bodies, but also the state or the provincial bodies as well, come together to discuss matters of mutual importance. So it's the largest gathering of parliamentarians anywhere in the world. That's what the conference does. But the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association does a whole lot more than that. It hosts things like meetings of speakers and presiding officers, meetings of women parliamentarians, meeting of parliamentarians with disability, or like what we've got today in Wellington, the meeting of youth parliamentarians all around the world. Now, these aren't actually young members of parliament. These are young aspiring members of parliament, I suspect, but extremely impressive young people with enormous futures ahead of them.
What's the value, though? You know, people from the outside might think that this is just another, jaunt or, jamboree of politically engaged young people. What's the value in it?
Well, there are a couple of things, I guess. The first is the ideas themselves are really important. And together they will debate, they'll discuss ideas that are about their future. You know, I'm in my middle age, I'm strutting off the stage at some point. I'm here to listen to what the ideas are of the generation who we are legislating for now. And these young people are some of the most articulate, intelligent, capable young people I've ever come across. But the second thing is, what it does is it allows people from a whole range of different nations all over the world, future leaders, key advocates, to build those relationships with each other now. It allows them to get an understanding of their differences, understanding of how different countries, different cultures operate, but also build interpersonal relationships so that they'll be able to be transferred into the future.
New Zealand Parliament, in organising the event, wanted to give delegates the full parliamentary experience of not just the legislative process, but also the scrutiny of government in the form of question time. The full parliamentary experience was indeed had. Delegates had obviously done their homework in the areas of one-upmanship and coming up with verbal jabs. Here's some of the more notable exchanges.
Supplementary, Mr. Speaker. The government claims that it is committed to a balanced approach when it comes to infrastructure and says that its projects are carefully evaluated. How do they plan on creating such large-scale infra without privatisation and private involvement?
Minister for Housing.
Point of order. Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Point of order.
Point of order. Point of order, standing order 18. Oral questions must be concise and not contain arguments, inferences, irony, allegations or opinions. That was a very loaded question, full of arguments, irony, inferences, allegations and opinions.
Point of order.
Just speaking to the members, point of order. It's vexatious. It's vexatious, and our members should be allowed to ask their questions as allowed. There is no time limit, I'll be reminded, on both sides for asking and answering questions.
Can the minister answer the original question?
I am. There's no point of order, Mr. Speaker. I've given them the timeline by when the dam will be completed, and I'm about to get
point,
to cost.
Point of order.
Sit down.
Point
I'm
of order.
I'm about to get to cost.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Point. Was that a point of order?
Next point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Point of order.
You were also supposed to tell me the estimated cost.
Yes, I was just about to. I thank the member for drawing me to the question. Now, I don't have a specific figure on hand, but I would ask, as the Progress Party, surely we're not putting a dollar cost on how much we care about the environment. Surely we want to stop coastal erosion. If it goes over budget, it's fine. We have the money, and we're committed to aggressive and strong climate action. Thank you.
Throughout the week, real MPs from New Zealand Parliament and the Victorian Parliament took up a mentoring role, coaching delegates on what is and isn't effective in the House. This often came in the form of light-hearted lessons in parliamentary procedure.
Is that a point of order?
Yeah, I just want to say it's great to hear that the OSD are happy not to put any figures on there. On the go.
That's not a point of order, but thank you.
One of the mentors was Member for Victoria Parliament's Upper House, Michael Galea, who himself grapples with the reality of being a young lawmaker in a real jurisdiction.
It's a
bit of a weird thing when you're 30 and you become an MP. You don't feel very young anymore. We have a mortgage and other things, but then you come into Parliament and you're one of the youngest members. So I guess I am classified as one of the younger MPs. It's been genuinely so impressive. It's an incredibly talented group of young people, and I feel almost strange saying that because I think the oldest of them are only a year or so younger than me, if I can say that. But they're a very talented group from right across the Commonwealth, and I've had a chance to see some of their internal meetings, in their caucuses, in their committee hearings, as well as in the Parliament chamber itself, and it's just been a very impressive group to see. You can definitely see, I'm sure we'll see their names in parliaments around the Commonwealth in quite a few years, not many years at all away. They've been very impressive with the way they've conducted themselves. They've acted and they've spoken up really strongly on behalf of the particular parties that they've been assigned to.
Being touted as a future lawmaker is an impressive and endearing feat. However, it does beg the question of how much pressure it puts on young people and perhaps how it affects their integrity. I chatted with New Zealand delegate Joseph Walden Karatiana about this.
Do you think that an environment like this is, you know, when you have constantly people being told, you know, you're the leaders of tomorrow, do you think that it pertains to sort of egos being built?
I honestly think without a doubt, you know, naturally when you're getting told that story and you're getting that, you know, spoken into your ear, you do start to believe it. But I also think what the difference is now is because, you know, people are a lot more mindful right now, and I feel like our generation in particular, we are a lot more conscious of that side of things. But I think it's important that people do understand. And I think, to be honest, I think I'd love to see how great Sean was saying before about how people have really embraced New Zealand culture as a whole. And I think that is we're very much a leader in that way where, you know, yep, we don't mind stroking the old ego, but you very much get brought back down to earth as well, which is actually a good experience because you sort of learn how much there is to learn in moving forward, because there's some young people here as well that are still, you know, very much in the early part of their career and their journey as well.
As observed with the discourse around the Make It 16 campaign, youth engagement in politics can be a contentious subject area. Jesse Rashid from South Australia immediately stood out as being more than comfortable in the parliamentary environment. Here are his thoughts on critics of youth in politics.
It's very funny you say that, because I've had arguments on Facebook with people that have said this. And it's really strange that lots of the times the people that make those criticisms are people that want to see better politicians and a better politics. And, you know, lots of the time there's this criticism that, oh, young people aren't very interested in politics. They don't do anything in politics. They're disengaged. They don't vote, et cetera, et cetera. And then the same group of people make criticisms as soon as we see young people get involved in politics, learn about parliamentary processes and stuff like that. And I think it's actually a really good thing to have more young people in politics, more young people involved in parliamentary procedure. And that is the way that we get more young people engaged in politics and actually making a difference. I think there's a sort of generally two ways of going about making change. One way is just sort of yelling about stuff on the sidelines and getting angry at stuff. The other way is actually involving yourself in the process. And I think the latter is far more helpful. And that's what I'm more interested in.
And you're a youth parliament veteran of sorts. How do you compare Commonwealth Youth Parliament with people from all over the globe versus youth parliament locally in South Australia?
It's kind of interesting. I don't know. I have enjoyed this because it's been, we're in one hotel hearing lots of different accents and everything. It's sort of getting used to all different cultural traditions and stuff. I've really enjoyed that part of it. It's a little bit different because we focus far more on local issues as a state government, you know, focus on areas like education, health, housing. We don't really have foreign affairs type things about, you know, big, large scale climate change resettlement programs like we're looking at in this bill. But yeah, it's really interesting. At the end of the day, like, I don't think there's too much distinction in just from this debate alone that I've just been a part of in the passion that people have and the sort of views that the young people have. I think around the world, and like at least within the Commonwealth at least, it seems like there's quite a lot of consistency in issues, in values, in sort of areas that people focus on, stuff like climate change, stuff like, you know, future prosperity, that sort of thing, jobs in the future. Housing is like a big one, and that comes up quite a bit in this bill, which I'm interested in. That comes up, you hear that lots in South Australian Youth Parliament as well.
I te whakarongo koe ki te whare. You've been listening to The House, a programme made with funding from Parliament's Office of the Clerk. Mā te wā.